So welcome everyone to this segment of the morning programs, the class, Bhagavatam class. So each time before we discuss the Bhagavatam, we say, Nasta payesu abhadrisu nityam Bhagavatam. Nitya Bhagavata seva. Bhagavati Uttama Sloka Bhakti Bhavayati Nayastiki. By listening, by hearing, discussing the narratives, the leelas of the Bhagavatam, leelas, stories of the Bhagavatam, Nasta Prayesu, we shared our impurities. So it's not just a ritual that, oh, another Bhagavatam class, oh, another Mangarati, oh, another Guru Puja. No, these are processes that have been established by the Acharyas. And so the Bhagavatam itself is not different from Krishna. And so the stories of the Bhagavatam are not ordinary stories. Unfortunately, even in India, you find people tend to depict the Vedic literature as mythology. Mythology is something that does not exist. The Bhagavatam was spoken, was documented, spoken and documented. So it is not a mythology. I remember one time we are in Vrindavan, we were on in Parikram, so we stopped over in one temple, one shrine. So there were some pamphlets left at the doorway, and I picked up one of these pamphlets. I was so infuriated. They are depicting the Krishna's pastimes as mythology. Oh yeah. That's right there in Vrindavan. So, the Bhagavatam is not a mythology because Srila Vyasadeva spoke it and he deputed his secretary to write it down. And therefore, it is something that serious-minded people will have to take it very seriously. Hearing the Bhagavatam, how it purifies the heart. It transforms the heart. It is a transformative agency. So here in this text, we are hearing the continuation of this project on the pregnancy of deity. This is a project, pregnancy of deity in the evening. Huh? So the description here is about Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is described as Vaishnavanam Yathasambhu, the greatest of all Vaishnavas. Yet, he is so detached, he lives in crematoriums. He does not even have a permanent residence. He is homeless. And people are worried about homeless people in America. But Lord Shiva, in fact, even the Swami is supposed to be homeless. Oh, yeah. You're planning to take sannyas means you're planning to be homeless. By dint of the sastric descriptions of the order, yeah, we are supposed to be homeless. In that way, you become detached. You will not get entangled. You will not become attached to any properties or people around you, people feeding you nicely, and all these things. So Lord Shiva is the greatest of all devotees. What makes him great? Because of his dedication, because of his detachment, and he's so knowledgeable. And sometimes people tend to think that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Lord. But Lord Shiva himself instructed Parvati that of all types of worship, because all types of worship means what? Even right from the beginning of creation, the sages, they deputed somebody amongst them. Who is that? To go and conduct an experiment. Who is the Supreme? Lord Vishnu? Lord Shiva? Lord Brahma? Who is the sage who conducted that experiment? Remember? Huh? What? Bhrigu Muni. Yeah, you're not sure. Yeah, so eventually when he conducted his experiment, he came up with the conclusion, because when he went to Brahma and neglected Brahma, Brahma was infuriated. But Brahma was very much controlled, self-controlled. He controlled his mind. Bhrigu did not pay obeisances to him. In the Vedic culture, you see, the first time you see your father, you have to pay obeisance. You see the spiritual master, you pay obeisance. First time you see a Swami in the morning, you pay obeisance. So Lord Brahma was conscious of that. He has four heads, so he is the most knowledgeable person in this universe. So he knows the scriptures back and forth. When Bhrigu Muni came, he did not pay respect to him. But that was intentional. He came for a purpose. He wanted to experiment. Who is the Supreme? Means who is free from ego? Who is free from anger? Who is free from the desire for worship? So he experimented with Lord Brahma. Brahma failed the test. He recorded his data and he went to Lord Shiva. And when he went to Lord Shiva, Bhrigu is Lord Shiva's brother. So you see your brother, you're ecstatic, you know, reunion, meeting. And so he came forward, Lord Shiva came forward to try to embrace Bhrigu. And Bhrigu said, "Hey, you live in crematoriums. You're filthy. Don't touch me." Imagine when you went to visit your brother, your lovely brother, okay? And he came forward to embrace you and he said, "Hey, don't touch me." But that was the situation. And Lord Shiva was very offended. He wanted to burn Bhrigu into ashes. He could do that. He has the power. But his consort persuaded him, calm him down. See, this is the beauty of a wife. Real, real good wife can save you from trouble. So his wife placated him, you know. "This is your brother, okay? He's just been childish. Don't worry." Master said, don't worry. "He's your brother, leave him alone." And Bhrigu went to our Lord Vishnu. And then he realized that this is the Supreme, because he stepped on the chest of Vishnu. And instead of Vishnu being upset, Vishnu was worried about Bhrigu's feet being hot, because he considered the chest to be very hard, like thunderbolt. So we see in this very pastime how Lord Shiva displayed his passion. Lord Shiva is a person in charge of the mode of passion. So the mode of goodness, the mode of passion and ignorance. Lord Shiva is the person in charge of the mode of ignorance. And there are several designated duties of Lord Shiva during the universal cataclysm, Lord Shiva also plays some role. Now it is mentioned in a number of the Puranas that in Kashi, if some dedicated devotee of Lord Shiva is passing away, he chants, Lord Shiva comes to chant Ram's names into their ears. So this is the mercy of Lord Shiva. This is the compassion of Lord Shiva. A number of people approach him, like Prabhupada mentioned in the purport. People approach him for material benefits. But at the end of life, those who are really dedicated to Lord Shiva's worship, he helps them to bestow the holy names on them. Worship of Lord Shiva is not a problem because Lord Shiva basically is very compassionate, but it's also very easy to displease Lord Shiva, Ashutosh. And therefore, Prabhupada depicts in the purport that the materialists who want affluence, who want some big position in society, they tend to navigate their way towards Lord Shiva. There's no problem with that. It's just that people do not identify, most of the worshippers of Lord Shiva do not really understand his purpose. Like Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, he recognizes himself as a devotee of Lord Krishna, and therefore he does not deem appropriate for anyone to offer luxurious things to him. He's satisfied with just hanging out in the crematorium and rubbing his body. We go to the mall to buy very expensive creams, isn't it? But Shiva uses simple creams like ashes from the crematorium. This is detachment. The world of a devotee is detachment. Lord Shiva is a prime example of detachment. You have everything at your disposal, yet you don't exploit anything. I repeat, you have everything at your disposal, yet you don't exploit anything. That is detachment. Detachment, for instance, doesn't imply that someone, okay, if I'm a poor guy, okay, and yeah, if I don't have something to eat, and then say I'm fasting, wait, what does that mean? I just don't have something to eat. But then, real fasting means you have food in your house. But you say, today, nowhere. My dear tongue, hold it. My dear belly, hold it. Sometimes also people think that when you come to devotional service, you just need to be poor. Or you don't need to do anything. Yeah, I've seen some. There's a lot of misconstruing of the scriptures. I know people in our movement who had kids and never schooled their kids. And I know one family, I don't want to mention the location, but in America, they're Prabhupada disciples, husband and wife. They send their two boys to India. They never schooled. Even high school, they didn't go. Graduate. So they stayed there. In their late age, they said they want to marry and they had to come back to America to go to high school. Because you need, even to work in a factory, you need some basic education. Otherwise, you would not know your left and right. So this is a typical example of how people misconstrue the Vedic system. we have to understand that detachment does not mean we deprive ourselves of talent acquisition or skills development. We may have the skills and use it in Krishna consciousness. And therefore it is important that we understand properly what detachment means. Otherwise, we can create a lot of inconvenience for even our own children. Because we will not prepare them for the to be able to integrate into the bigger society. Jai Sisirara Gokulananda Kijai. Sitaram Lakshmanan Mangurani Tai Kijai. And therefore, as devotees, we do not need to worship Lord Shiva. Vaishnavas, we do not worship, we need to worship Lord Shiva. We worship Krishna. Because even Lord Shiva, he recognizes and he identifies himself as a servant devotee of Lord Krishna. And he says all of the luxuries should be given, should be offered to Lord Shiva. Should be offered to Krishna. I remember I was traveling in America one time, so I was in Boston. I stayed in one guy's home. And then, you know, he was showing me some of his luxuries. It's a white boy. He was showing me some. He's a young man, 30, but he has this a boat at the harbor of $500,000. He used to keep me in that boat. So then he was showing me some of his wealth, some of his luxuries and all this stuff. And he told me how one sadhu came to his place and he saw this, I don't know whether it's, I think it's a watch, golden watch. And he said, you should give this to Krishna. So here is a typical situation where we are expected to be detached. And we go to see somebody and we use Krishna as a facade. Give it to Krishna. But you're not going to give it to Krishna anyway. You want to use it. The devotee is an emblem of detachment. And we can't use our devotional status to exploit people. And sometimes some opulent or affluent people come to our movement and we pester them so much that they run away. Yes, so devotees have to understand that we have to maintain some dignity and decorum in our devotional lives. You see, Lord Shiva has so much at his disposal, but he's very detached. It means Lord Shiva never attempts to exploit anybody. He doesn't need a luxurious house. He doesn't need luxurious food. You know, we have all these powerful feasts in our temples. But sometimes under the feast, we put so much of excessive ingredients that, see, there's a difference between the conditioned soul and Krishna. We're not Krishna. We may say Krishna, you know, eats sweets all the time. We eat sweets all the time. We may end up with diabetes. So we should be detached, at least to some degree, about with everything. The tongue is very tempting. We need to be detached from the influence, from the appellation of the tongue. Otherwise, we could get into trouble. So Lord Shiva is a typical example that we should accept any position just to be able to expand the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to expand the mission of Srila Prabhupada. But it doesn't mean that we should not take good care of our devotees. These are people who have sacrificed their lives. And so we should not end up giving them just some rice and dal every day. I won't mention the temple. I remember going to some temple, and then, they came to offer me, Kishri? Yeah. And I already sent them in advance about my dietary needs. I have recommendations from Ayurvedic doctors and allopathic doctors about things I shouldn't take. So then, they don't really care about anything, and they just brought me some kishri. So I said, listen, I don't mind eating this, and then, so what? But I have dietary needs. I gave my life to this movement. So just what? And my food is not even expensive. I remember when I was in New Jersey as a brahmachari, and then the chief cook was agitating that they have to cook separately for me because I don't eat salt, no sweets, no oil, and all those things. So she went to report to the president. President was a retired medical doctor. And then the president turned against her and said, you see, I wish all the temples should take Vasudev's type of meal because it's very cost effective. And so sometimes to maintain the devotees could be viewed as, something we need to be cost effective about. But no, these are people who are giving their lives to Krishna. Except we want people to act like Lord Shiva and go live in the forest and live in the crematorium. But we live in the temple because we want to preach. So taking care, devotee care, should be very much considered as part of our mission. And because we worship in Krishna, Krishna is the possessor of everything. Bhuktaram Jagat Tapasa. We are not the enjoyer. We should give everything to Krishna. We tell people, give this to Krishna. We collect it. We should give it to Krishna. So, bottom line is that at least the descriptions in this text, it shows two categories of people who wants to merge into Lord Shiva at the end of life. And then the other one simply wants material assets. But Krishna says, if even we have a desire for material assets, that's no problem. Krishna said, come to me. Whatever you want, you come to me. So here we are. And when we do come to Krishna, if even we have some type of desires, through devotional service, all of these desires are purified by worship of Krishna, service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we become free. There's nothing else. There's no secret. So Prabhupada has given us what we need to use to be able to graduate from this school of material existence, to finish this business and get out from this material world. Don't think that when you become the Prime Minister of UK, then you'll be happy. There are people who have attained all of those positions and yet they are not happy. I don't think that when you go to get some, big, big degrees, then you'll be happy. Just on Wednesday I went to the Studio 108. So after the program, I was sitting around to be able to see if people come to me to make their private inquiries and questions. And then one of these young ladies, she was asking me some questions. And she was very confused because what to do with her life. She has a PhD in economics. She's applying for another PhD in arts. But she's not. She's very confused. She's not happy. So Krishna consciousness gives us an opportunity to be able to align ourselves with the absolute reality. Krishna's two Bhagavans for you. And we should dovetail using Prabhupada's words, dovetail all of our activities in the service of the Lord. And we'll be happy. The material desires, that's not a problem. It's not a check from Krishna service. Dhruva had a lot of material desires. When Vishnu appeared to him, he became purified. So we don't have anything to worry about. Any comments or questions? Yes? Any comments or questions? Yes?
How to deal with the material desires?
Yeah, that's a nice question. How to deal with material desires? We have to pray to Krishna. Either we pray to Krishna to fulfill those material desires, or we pray to Krishna to remove those material desires. But the point is, whether we like it or not, if we engage in the fire of devotional service, material desires are burned to ashes. We just by engaging in hearing the Bhagavatam, Nasta Prayesu Abhadresu. By hearing the Bhagavatam, reading the Bhagavatam, chanting Krishna's glories, material desires will vanish. But yeah. Any other comments to this?
We used to do a book table on the Isle of Wight where I was born. And there were two things that happened, actually, I remember. There was a person, he used to play accordion. Very nice, and we had a table, and he used to sing. And an interesting thing that's, these children, instantly they started dancing, you know, like Lord Chaitanya. And, but also, in the summer, a lot of ladies, you know, they sort of dress sort of a very temptation way. But then when you start to show a book, you don't see their body. It's actually all of a sudden, your absorption in what wanting to show them the thing, their body disappears, and that was a feature I found in there. And also a young lady, she was getting pressured by her parents, pass this exam. She says, oh, what can I do? And I said, well, there's a nice book here that gives you another point of view, that actually whatever you do, whatever you get in your talent, that Krishna will give you. And so you should not give in to these desires, you know, and pressurizing your parents. And she says, I really need to know this. And she took a book. So there's a lot of little happenings that on Sankirtan that thing that make us understand that we if we concentrate on what is best, other desires disappear. That's for certain. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, whatever desires we may have, will go away. It's just a matter of the quality of our devotional involvement. Krishna consciousness is like a fire. And so when we get involved in Krishna consciousness, the fire of devotional service burns off all of those material desires. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't have some temptations, but we don't give in to it. Consciously resist the negative temptation. But we will not be able to do that if we don't chant at least 16 rounds. It's so easy. I think I was telling these devotees yesterday or so. I went to one country in the Caribbean, so there was this young boy who was asked to come and assist me. And yeah, he's a devoted child, 18 years old. He's in university doing study of mechanical engineering. So, and people come close to me, one of my responsibilities is to encourage them to chant. So I ask whether he chants, because his parents are devotees. I asked him how many rounds does he chant. He chants, and he said zero. Zero. Then I asked, "You have a girlfriend?" He said, "Yes." Yeah, if you're not chanting, it's so easy to fall in Maya. Yeah. So the point is that we chanting, we may be distracted in the beginning. We should understand the process of devotional service is something that is on stages. So we are in the preliminary stage where we have so much of distractions. But we should understand that we will navigate through that confusing, disturbing, destructive stage and get to the next level till we get to prema. So yeah, it might not be something comfortable in the beginning, because to wake up early in the morning and start your sadhana may not be something comfortable with many people. Yeah. I had the great fortune of, you know, when I came into the temple, and then we have to wake up at 3 o'clock, a bell will be rung. And then the temple commander goes around and he wakes everybody up. But I did that in high school. I was exposed to that system in high school. High school, we stayed in a boarding house, and 4 o'clock, we have to wake up. The school prefect rings a bell, goes around to all of the dormitories. He rings the bell, 4 o'clock, you have to wake up. 13 years, 14 years, 15 years. You have to go and read for at least 2 hours before the morning devotion. So when I came to the devotional service, and then I saw this, going to bed at 9 o'clock and waking up at 3, I said, come on, I did this when I was a small boy. But it's not easy with most people. It's like a first exposure in life. You get used to sleeping late, watching television until 2 o'clock and all those things. And then go to sleep late and wake up at 11 o'clock, especially during the weekends. Then here they say you have to get up to come to Mangarati at 4:30. You have to do this and do that. So some people might be difficult, but practice makes perfect. All right, our time is over. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Right. I wasn't brought up worshipping Lord Shiva.
Huh?
A lot of us have been brought up worshipping Lord Shiva,
uh-huh,
and also all the demigods that go with it, you know. And the messages you're saying about Lord Shiva is so important about detachment. So how do we forsake Lord Shiva now that we learned about Krishna? Because I still have a Lord Shiva's murti, and I offer him light. Is that a good thing? I mean,
yeah, it's a good
people
thing.
Say
Lord Shiva is described as the greatest of all Krishna's devotees. Vaishnavana Yata Sambhu is the greatest of all the devotees. Lord Shiva told Parvati, of all types of worship, the worship of Lord Vishnu is the best. Higher than the worship of Lord Vishnu is Tadiya, property of Lord Vishnu, paraphernalia of Lord Vishnu, the spiritual master. Lord Shiva is not a bad thing to worship Lord Shiva. The point is understand the position of Lord Shiva. Okay. Let's be clear. Lord Shiva is the greatest of all the devotees of Lord Krishna. But we should not worship Lord Shiva as the Supreme Personality of God. That's all. It's just a change of mindset.
But sometimes we get ill advised because when people come to my home, they say you should not keep these demigods.
Yeah.
And when I people used to give me their demigods because this is your better home for it. I can't manage this. You know, take Lord Shiva, Parvati, Ganesha, and so on. So I've got them, and Saraswati Mata has broken her arm, and some people say, put it in the river or the sea, don't keep it in your home. So I asked my brother, and he said, if your child broke his arm, would you get rid of him? So I still got her. I offer light to her. So yeah, I'm confused because you do get advice from senior devotees, you know.
Yeah, the senior devotees, they are talking like Lord Krishna, you know. Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna.
That's what I mean.
Lord Krishna condemned the worship of the demigods. Okay, some of the senior people also, they took the position of Lord Krishna and they talk, hey, the worship of demigods is all nonsense. Yeah, but it's even Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that we should not forsake people. We should see how to motivate and inspire people based on their level of awareness, level of consciousness. I know of some people in our movement. They are Brahmins. We have children who are themselves Brahmins. But I stay in their home and I see them do puja to Hanuman. In the morning, part of their puja, they do puja to Hanuman. The essential thing is to be able to integrate Krishna consciousness in our lives. We can't push everyone to just, I mean, it's like telling everybody, you have to be a brahmachari. You are schooling in a university, just stop your studies, move to a temple and come be a brahmachari. People still preach like that in our movement. And we see that so many devotees are getting married. And so if you ask someone to stop their studies, to move into the temple, and at some point in time they said they want to marry, they want to have a family, and they don't have skills. And a proper disciple complained to me in Alachua, in America, in Florida. Yeah, devotees coerced him to leave his studies. He was studying medicine. Devotees coerced him to leave his studies to come and be a brahmachari. And he succumbed to it. But then it brought a big problem in his family. He won over by the help of the devotees. But along the way, along the line, when as the years unfold, he felt the need to marry. So he, at the time he was telling me the story, he had, you know, children. And he was telling me this, I felt very bad. And he said, marriage. So, but now I'm married with children, I don't have skills. I'm not talking about Puranic story. I'm telling you what is transparent. So it's in a similar way, we can't just tell everybody to just automatically stop. No, we should do some devotional analysis and understand that everybody is not on the same level. People should be cultivated based on the level of Krishna consciousness. He can't tell everybody to become a sannyasi. If everybody becomes a sannyasi, what about all these beautiful girls? Who is going to marry them? All right, we have to stop here because... Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.